Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
Good morning. This is Jay Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. And you could be our very, very first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll-free 1-800-WROW-590. Good morning, Jay Marie.
Good morning.
So ready for a big, exciting, sunny day, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You got to get out in the sun before the rain tomorrow.
I know. The rain has been a lot, but Stacy told us we need to talk about the client seminars this morning.
We do, but before we do that, I want to compliment Ben on his pink headphones. They are quite spiffy.
Do you like that?
I didn't see him. Let's see.
Stand up.
Ooh, nice.
See, these headphones I actually dug out of the garbage.
Ooh.
Someone threw them away because they only come out of one side of the headphones. Mm-hmm. So the right headphone works, the left one doesn't. Mm-hmm. I only wear one. Right. I keep the other one off my ear.
Right.
Perfect for me. So.
And you're man enough to wear pink.
Look at the shirt I'm wearing.
It matches very well.
Obviously, with an aqua shirt, I can wear
aqua
pink.
Shirt.
I'm in touch with my feminine side. What can I tell you?
Because he knew you and I were going to be here today.
Exactly.
Yes, right.
It's Ladies' Day today, of course.
Ladies' Day.
That's right.
There you go. Exactly. So, client seminars. The first one is next week.
That's right. Coming up really soon. Come. We'd love for you to come. We have a special guest speaker from Alzheimer's Association. She's going to be speaking about the 10 signs of Alzheimer's.
We're laughing because yesterday we're kicking off our Alzheimer's walks. We're one of the sponsors. And Kim came in yesterday and did a presentation to our staff. And whenever she did the presentation, she gave us the test.
She did. So first she kind of gave us some props, to kind of make us feel as if we were someone who did have, Alzheimer's. We had the lights dim. We had cotton balls in our ears.
Cotton balls in our ears.
We had our fingers taped up,
Yeah, and then she told us, she asked us questions really, really quick.
That's right. It was the mini mental exam.
Yeah, mini mental exam.
Right. And unfortunately, no one really did that well.
No. Jay Marie decided between the two of us, we got enough to score,
On our own, we'd be in the home by now. So.
We could get adjoining rooms. You don't realize there's, a lot of stuff. I mean, one of the questions was draw a clock and what was 10 of 11?
Yes, that's right.
And everybody's so digital now.
Oh, I was. I'm like, I don't remember how to do that. I'm like,
the thing is, though, when you think about it, for someone that's dealing with Alzheimer's, it's got to be absolutely horrific scary.
Yes,
it is.
Because you're trying to go back and forth from reality to whatever. And it's like, it must be like ants trying to answer questions in rapid fire succession. And you have no idea.
That's right.
So it's really scary.
It is very scary.
And then she went into the fact that there is no cure.
Yes, I know.
At least with cancer and heart disease, there's things that they can do.
Right.
But with Alzheimer's, there's not.
No, so that's why a lot of the money needs to be funded into research.
Exactly, so that we can find a cure. And so we're going to be doing, I think we're doing like 5 walks.
Something like that. That's
yeah,
right.
We're doing 5 walks.
Most of the fall, we'll be walking.
Most of the fall, if you want to find us, we'll be out walking someplace. So
think of how healthy you'll be.
Exactly.
It'll be great.
That's right.
Or how much more food you can eat. Because you've burned up a lot of calories.
I like the second option.
Yeah, I do too.
That's right.
So, and at the client seminar, we'll have a list of all the walks that we're participating in. And we'd love some of our clients to join us too. Again, we'll have a list and a link to where you can join one of our teams. And we'll be walking in Schenectady and Albany.
Columbia Green.
Columbia Green.
And
Glens Falls.
That's right.
Yeah, so. But we'd love for you to be our first caller at 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. There are a few seats left. I know that the ones in Albany and at Glen Sanders are filling up fairly quickly for the client seminar. Then Kingston is next week. So last minute, if you want to call Stacy and get a seat, you can give her a call at the office at 518-476-5900. 516-465-7581. That's 518-465-7581. And she can reserve a seat for you at one of the client seminars.
Right. Stacy wanted to say that even though it's past the RSVP deadline, you can still call and get a seat.
That's it. So
we're not that going to hold you to that deadline.
Nope, definitely not going to hold you to it. So any new and exciting things this week?
Oh, there always is something new and exciting. I'm doing a guardianship case, unfortunately, for these children. Both parents need guardians.
Oh, no.
And this just really goes back to the importance of, you know, doing advanced directives. The dad is incapacitated in a, you know, nursing home. He had appointed the wife as his power of attorney, but had no backup.
That's not good.
And now the wife needs a guardian over her. So at first we're doing the guardianship because she didn't have documents. So we're doing it for her, and we were getting the children appointed to take care of her. And then at some point we realized, well, dad had appointed mom. So now there's no one to take care of dad, so we need to get a guardian appointed for dad. So two guardianship proceedings to help take care of these people.
And it's not an inexpensive procedure.
No, it's not.
Because you have a lot of attorneys involved.
With two people, there's going to be a lot of attorneys appointed, you know. And even though we know that they're going to get the guardianship to children, there's really no doubt about that. We still have to go through all the steps and go to court and have attorneys involved.
No, guardianship and probate. Probate is something that a lot of people don't think about. I've actually been to the surrogates court in Saratoga for the last 2 weeks on Tuesdays. And all it is to appear, because what happens is when someone passes away and they have assets that are individually in their name, then you have to have an executor appointed. And what happens with that is you have to notify all the heirs at law, meaning the people that would take, even if they're not in the will, the people that would take if the person didn't have a will. And so if you have disgruntled brothers and sisters, which was the situation in, you know, actually both of the ones that I had to go to, they just basically refused to sign what's called a waiver that says, fine, let them be executor and whatever. And so I had to appear in court. And it's just an expense that could have been avoided if the parent had done a trust. If the parent had done a trust, then the trust terminates when the second person dies. Well, that's if it's a couple. And it goes out to the kids. And there's no probate. There's no courts. And it just saves everybody a lot of time and a lot of heartache.
It does. I have a couple where the wife has Alzheimer's. And no one in the family, well, they don't have children, it's just her husband, doesn't really know her relatives. You know, they don't know who they are, where they are. So we were talking about it, and we were thinking about what a nightmare that would be if we had to go to court and find all her relatives. So we're trying to get things into irrevocable trust for her.
That makes sense. Right. I have another one where we have minor children, because the child passed away, and leaving twin children, I think it's boys, anyway, and so they're like, well, the parent can sign for them. No, the parent can't sign for them. We're going to have to go to court and have a guardian ad litem appointed by the court to make sure that they receive the correct notice. So, again, it's something that could have been avoided if they had done a trust. We wouldn't have had to go to court.
Right, and the trust, you could have even named the parent to take care of the money for the child,
kid.
For the kid, or someone else, right? But it wouldn't be a court involvement.
No. Nope. So give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Or toll free is 1-800-WROW-590. That's 1-800-WROW-590. So other than court, trust just makes everything a lot easier. It also protects your assets. If you do an irrevocable trust and you end up having to go into a nursing home, I've met with a couple of people this week that they're like, why doesn't everyone do this?
That's right. We try and get the word out.
You know? We try.
We try, but people, not everyone knows about it. When they learn about it, they usually want to do it, right? But there are people who don't know about it, and if they go to a nursing home, the nursing home's just going to tell them, oh, pay us all your money, you know?
Right, pay us all your money, and then we'll make sure you get on Medicaid.
That's right, and they're not going to let you know that there are ways you can save money.
Nor are they going to look at the fact that you transferred some money, too. I had a situation this week where people came in and the parent is not doing well. And they start, one of the kids starts out with, and this $25,000 CD, we don't know where it went. And then I'm looking at the other sibling, and there's just this face. And she finally says, okay, we just can't go any further with this. She's like, Dad cashed it in. He gave us each half. You know, that's where the money went. It was 2 years ago. And I'm like, right. Well, yeah, they were going to find that out anyway.
That's right.
You can't just say, well, it disappeared. I don't know where it went.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They find out. They look at your bank records and they see it, you know, and they're going to figure out, you know, it's missing. You know, if you can't explain it, that's a penalty.
Right. They just assume that you gave it away, which you did. So that's right. That's one of those things where you've got to make sure that you're prepared. And if they had actually, the person had gone into the nursing home, spent down the rest of their assets, and then when they applied for Medicaid, they said, oh, excuse me, where did this $25,000 go? Mm-hmm. They would have been like, well, you know, it's just gone. And they would have said, okay, you've got like a 2.5 month penalty. Now figure out how to private pay for 2.5 months.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And now your money's gone.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So you really need to think about pre-planning as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. But back to the nursing homes, this must be my week for guardianships. There's another case I was talking to someone about. And his dad was in the nursing home, and the nursing home applied to be his guardian because they weren't sure there was money to get paid, right? So now they got a temporary guardian appointed for him. And so they're not going to think about Medicaid planning to save money.
No.
They're just going to take his money, spend it down, and then apply to Medicaid. So now the family has to get back involved. There was a reason why they couldn't in the beginning. But now they need to get back involved and try and take back control of the, you know, things so they can do some planning, you know, give some assets to the spouse and, you know, protect assets.
You can. There's a lot of simple things you can do to avoid probate and avoid situations with guardianships, too. I was meeting with people yesterday and I said, so on your accounts, because on the questionnaire we have like kind of his, hers, and joint. And a lot of times you'll see people, I have a his, she has a hers, and then there's a joint. And I'm like, so these individual accounts, is the spouse, you know, are you on each other's accounts? Well, no, that's my money.
That's right.
So you can keep it as your money, but you could name the other person as a beneficiary.
Right.
So that if something happened to them, you know, then you would have access to it. Or if you have a power of attorney, then they would have access to it while you're alive.
I thought you were going to say what I also hear is, you know, oh, it's my money, but it's actually titled in joint names.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's my account, that's his account, and they insist that, right? Mm-hmm. And we have to kind of sort through that to try and move things around for Medicaid.
And you need to make sure that you have contingent beneficiaries, too, on your retirement accounts and on your life insurance. I had a life insurance the other day that mom bought it on the son and made herself the beneficiary. And mom's been gone for a long time, and the son just passed away.
And there was no alternate.
There was no alternate, and they never changed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're looking at how are we going to collect this money? So, and it's silly to have to go through a full-blown probate just to get something small like that.
People don't always think of updating their beneficiary designation. So that's something when if you come in to meet with us, we kind of do like a checkup, right, on your estate plan. We're going to ask you that question. And they're like, oh, I guess I have to check that, you know. Well, yeah, it's a good thing to check it now and take care of it now and get it done, right?
Mm-hmm. We'd love for someone to give us a call. We can talk back and forth for the whole hour. It wouldn't be an issue, but we'd love to hear your call. 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900, or 1-800-WROW-590. That's 1-800-WROW-590.
I told Debbie if we ran out of things to talk about, we're just going to talk about spring fashion.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe that'll prompt someone to call.
We started talking about that yesterday when we were talking about white.
It's okay to wear white because it's after Memorial Day.
Exactly. So we were just...
Oh, look, there's a call coming in.
It worked.
It worked. There you go.
That's right. Debbie is wearing white today.
There you go. Exactly. But you know, the reason it is because I couldn't decide whether the top was navy or black.
Oh, I have that problem all the time.
You know, so if I put black shorts on and it looked navy, I put navy shorts on and it looked black, I'm like, white.
White is the perfect answer.
White is the perfect answer. White or khaki. You know, they almost go with everything. But
that's right.
But definitely. And that's the whole thing. It's like we were talking about that yesterday about white shoes.
Mm-hmm. That's right. People are probably tired of hearing us talk about white. So we have a call coming in. We have George in Gilderland.
Good morning, George.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I am doing well, thank you. My wife and I are in the process of updating our wills and creating a trust, and so I have some questions concerning both trust and wills, if you don't mind.
Okay.
One of the things that we would like to put into a trust is a vacation property, and putting it into something called an irrevocable trust seems like a really serious consideration. And so I was wondering if you put, in this case, it would be a vacation home, into a trust. Would it be possible if, you know, 5 years later you say, well, I really don't like that house, I'd like to get something closer or something that's, whatever, you know, more handicap friendly, something like that. Is it possible to sell, you know, your property that's in a trust and then purchase something else?
Yes, absolutely, you can. So your trustee would have to be the, you know, person to do that. But the trust allows the trustee to sell the real estate, purchase new real estate. Now, the only thing to keep in mind, that has to be with your consent, because for any real estate, you have a life use in that real estate. So that means the trustee can't sell it unless you agree to have it sold. But if you want to have it sold and you go out and you find a new place, then your trustee can sell it and purchase a new property. And you want to make sure the new property is also purchased in the name of the trust.
Okay. All right, fine. So if we put this place into a trust, and then we have all these bills, we have like tax bills, utility bills, and things like that. Currently, they're in my name. Could they be? Do they need to be put into the name of the trust? You know, the trust of George Smith or whatever.
Well, the tax bills will be, but you'll still be responsible for paying the taxes. But the other bills, like the utilities and such, they can just stay in your name. They wouldn't have to go into the trust name.
All right. What about the insurance bills?
So the insurance, what we do is a little different with that. The insurance we leave in your name, but we add the trust onto the insurance policy as something called an additional insured. So both you and the trust are both insured on the property. But again, that's a bill that's going to come to you, and you would still pay that bill.
Okay, so that's good. All right. Also have a couple of questions about wills. We currently have a will, but, you know, it's like 25, 30 years old. So my question is, when we get the new will, which reflects our, you know, most recent mindset, what should we do with copies of the old will? Should we just shred them and get rid of them completely, or...
I would, because when you do a new will, it automatically revokes your old wills, so that old will is no longer valid. So it's probably cleaner just to get rid of the copies you have, so it's, you know, clear to your children, which is the current will. I mean, they can look at the deed also and see that the newer one is the one that's valid.
Okay. And what about, I've heard that it's not a good idea to put, if you have specific items, say like, you know, an engagement ring or a baseball card collection, it's not a good idea to write that into your will as to who gets what. But what you can do is write a letter saying, I want, you know, this item to go to this person, this item to go to that person. Is that legally binding if you do it that way?
No, that's the problem. If you put it into your will, then yes, that's legally binding and your executor needs to follow that. But sometimes there's reasons why you don't want it to go into the will. There may be too many items, or you may want to change your mind and want to switch it around. So if you do it as a separate letter, that's not legally binding on your executors. But of course, I always tell people, you hope your children are going to follow what your written wishes are. But you just have to keep in mind there's no legal recourse for that.
Okay, so the only legally binding thing would be to actually write it into the will.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so are these types of letters successful where you say, you know, it's not written into the will, but I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, do people generally follow these wishes? Or
I've only ever had one. I've only had one where they didn't. And it was kind of one of those situations. It wasn't a child. It was a nephew. And the nephew was supposed to distribute the personal property. The will said, I leave it to my nephew, and for him to distribute it pursuant to my gift letter. And the court only looks at the four corners of the will. So that when they look at the four corners of the will, they say, it goes to my nephew, right? And so he said, nope, it's mine. Even though she had specific items that she wanted to go to different people, he didn't distribute them.
Okay. All right, then.
So now you've had estate planning 101, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a great deal to it. No wonder lawyers specialize only in estates.
Yeah, there's a lot to know about it.
There is, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling. We really appreciate it.
Okay.
Have a great weekend. You know, the gift letter is one of those things where I have a lot of clients that have the gift letter only because a lot of my clients are snowbirds, right? So they go down to Florida and they have their documents say one thing, and then they go down to Florida and who doesn't visit and who doesn't come. And so they come back in May
and
they say, okay, this one didn't visit, this one didn't do this. So, you know, they don't get the diamond ring, they don't get this anymore. So they end up changing the personal property. They don't change the money. It's just the stuff.
Right.
And so finally I just said, look, you know, let's just do a letter. That way, you know, I'd love to meet with you guys every year when you come back from Florida. But, you know, we'll just do this letter. And then that way you can change it. And you can just send it to me. Have it signed. We tell you to have it witnessed by two disinterested witnesses.
That's right.
And we'll put it in your file. Because it's crazy to have to change your will every year.
Every year. That would be crazy. Just because you want, you know, your ring to go to someone different every year.
Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those things where you got to think about these things, but like I said, only one time have I ever had somebody that didn't follow the letter.
Most of the time, it's your child who's the executor, and they're going to follow your wishes, you know. Or usually the children know ahead of time, because usually mom has spoken to them about it. You're going to get this emerald or diamond, whatever, when I die. You know, kids kind of know what's happening.
Yeah, they do. We've got a few minutes before the break if you want to be our last caller for the first half hour at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. I think in the past when there was like a state tax and it was such a low level, people didn't want to put stuff in their wills because they didn't want like the IRS to know that they had a Rolex watch or
That's
a Renoir
right.
painting or something like that.
That's
so
right.
they didn't want to be specific about what items they had in their wills.
Right. They didn't want to have to get everything valued. Right.
Exactly. To have right. So now that the estate tax level is so high, I don't think it's such of an issue as it was before.
That's true.
I think we have a caller.
I think we do.
We have Gary in Postenkill.
Good morning, Gary.
Hey, how are you today?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. I have a quick question about Medicaid. I know there's a lot of Medicaid planning that goes on. What qualifications are necessary for a person's condition for them to be accepted in a nursing home?
Okay, so generally, to be admitted to a nursing home, you know, you need definitely to have some care. There's going to be medical, you know, whether you can do your activities of daily living. But kind of how that happens is there's really kind of two ways to get in a nursing home. So you're in a hospital, right? Because you had some incident and then you can't go right home. So the hospital is going to discharge you to a nursing home. So that's all kind of determined in the hospital, right? Whether you are qualified for a nursing home. What's not as common is if you're at home and you need to go to a nursing home. So in that case, you have to have a nurse come and do something called a PRI. And that's how they assess you to see whether you would qualify for nursing home care. And then they give you a score and see whether you could go to a nursing home or not.
A score, okay.
Yes,
yeah, because I know it's... it can happen. That happened to my mother-in-law, where she was in assisted living, and of course that's a very expensive thing. And then she was taken care of by a family member, and then she fell.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really her entree into the nursing home.
That's right.
But so it really is that you need to have some kind of event or some kind of chronic condition or something like that that causes the qualification to be accepted in a nursing home.
That's right. Okay. And sometimes it's kind of tough with dementia, right? Because in the early stages, you don't really need a lot of medical attention. So you may not qualify high enough to get into a nursing home. You may qualify for assisted living.
Memory care.
Yeah. So sometimes your score is too low, you know. And in this case, is you know, you can't get into the nursing home, so you may have to continue paying privately for assisted living. Or you could go home and have Medicaid, you know, help take care of you at home.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All righty. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, thanks.
That's a great question.
It is. Yeah.
But and a lot of people face that, too. It's like they're... person's not well enough to really stay home, but they're not bad enough that they really need to go into a nursing home.
That's right.
And whenever someone goes out of the hospital into rehab, then when they hit that plateau in rehab, when they say they need either to go home with 24/7 care or they need to go into a nursing home, then the family has to make a decision at that point in time as to what they're going to do, whether they're going to have the person admitted to the nursing home or whether they're going to try to take them home and hopefully maybe get community medicated home.
That's right.
So there's lots of different things that you can do.
And one thing which is really important is if you're in the hospital and you're going to be discharged to the nursing home, you have to be admitted as a patient. And I've recently went into the hospital. and I'm signing the papers and I was going to stay overnight. And they said, you're not admitted. You're on observation status.
And you're like, I'm having surgery. Hello.
I'm having surgery. I'm staying overnight. Nope, you're just on observation. And I said, now I know what all my clients go through.
Right. Oh, we have a call. We have Bill from Queensbury. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good. a question regarding a will. Okay, you can change that, of course, at any time.
Mm-hmm.
A trust, if you have a trust, it doesn't really become activated, I guess, unless it was it 5 to 7 years or...
Well... it depends. I mean, whenever you do an inter vivos trust, which is a trust that you make while you're alive, a trust goes into effect as soon as you sign it. But what you're talking about is asset protection. So if I set up an irrevocable trust today and I funded it with my assets, they wouldn't be protected for 5 years if I had to go into a nursing home. But my trust would be active. My trust would exist and it would have assets in it. They just wouldn't be protected until 5 years.
Very, of course, you still keep your will because if something happens then and the trust isn't for protecting assets, then the will would still need to be in place, correct?
No. Usually, if you have your assets in a trust, so the goal is to avoid probate. So we want everything to either be in the trust or have a beneficiary or be joint. Okay, so if everything's in the trust or it has a beneficiary, it's joint, then we don't have to probate your will. The will is kind of a justing case. We have wills, when we prepare documents, we do what's called a pour-over will. And what that means is we do identical language in the will and the trust so that if we forget to put something in the trust or name a beneficiary, that the will says, hey, pour it into my trust. If the trust isn't there, then this is where it goes. But if you have everything titled correctly, then you shouldn't have to have a will. It's just there just in case.
So the gray area is, of course, no one knows when they're going to die.
Correct.
That's right.
And if you're older and in good health, you know, you're still looking for longer longevity. But does that mean that you can't, at that point, sell any properties that you've got in the trust or access any monies in the trust? It's locked away.
Well, not really. For an irrevocable trust, you can transfer your property into it and you can transfer, let's just say, your brokerage account into it. And as far as your house goes, if you decided to sell your house, basically the trustee would be the one that signs the listing agreement and they would sign the contract and everything. And then at the closing, you would also have to sign the deed. But then the money would go back into the trust. And then if you wanted to buy a new house, the new house would be purchased by the trust. So it would have the same original date as the first house that went in there. But you can buy, sell, trade, stock, you just can't write yourself a check. The trustee would have to write you a check if you needed to get money out of the trust. And it's a little bit more complicated than that, but you can always, in New York, revoke an irrevocable trust.
Got it. The other question, yeah, the other question, the trustee, that would be a bank or attorney or...
Most people name their kids. So kids, brother, sister, niece, nephew. Banks will act as trustee. They do charge a trustee fee. A lot of attorneys won't act as trustee just because, well, our firm anyway, we kind of feel like it's a conflict of interest. So we really don't want to serve as trustee. There are some firms that do. And some people name their CPA. It just depends on what kind of relationship you have. But you do have to name somebody other than yourself as trustee of an irrevocable trust. Because if you can write yourself a check, you can write the nursing home a check.
All right. So if you say most people use their children as the trustee,
mm-hmm.
with the assumption that they are the ones that would inherit in the trust.
Yes. Well, they don't have to be. I mean, a lot of people will have their kids as trustee. I've had people that have their kids as trustee and have all their money go to charity. So, and they've had people that their kids are the trustees and the beneficiaries. So it just depends on what your situation is.
Good. Okay. You've answered my questions.
Great. I like the easy questions.
Oh, I'm glad it was an easy one. Well, thank you.
Thank you. You have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Great. Great calls. And we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Jay Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here to answer your calls on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. You could be our first caller in this section, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. Ooh, that was tough. 1-800-WROW-590. So we had a lot of great callers right there at the end.
Yeah, we did. Lots of good questions. Yeah.
Lots of good questions.
Kept us busy.
I know, kept us busy. I did want to mention that we don't have regular seminars in June or July, but we are going to have them in August. And August is going to be on aging in place. And aging in place is going basically what Dave calls it, care on your couch, right?
That's right.
So it goes through the fact that you can actually stay home and receive Medicaid to pay for your care. So those are going to be Thursday, August 1st at 2 in the afternoon at the Best Western in Kingston. Tuesday, August 13th at 2 in the afternoon at the Hampton Inn in Clifton Park. Wednesday, August 14th at 10 a.m. at Washington Ave in Albany, and Wednesday, August 14th at 6:30 in the evening at Glenn Sanders Mansion. Oh, and Thursday, August 15th at 2 in the afternoon at Holiday Inn Express in East Greenbush. So those are on our website. If you want to book a seat for that, there's going to be plenty of time, but just kind of a heads up so you can look at your calendar and kind of block it out because, you know, track season, what can I say?
That's right.
We have a caller. We have Barbara from Saratoga. Good morning, Barbara.
Oh, that was quick. I have several questions, of course. Everybody does. First of all, in the invitation that was sent out as a client,
mm-hmm.
when you're coming, I haven't made the reservation, and the one in on Wolf Road.
Mm-hmm.
If you're coming from the top of Wolf Road from Shaker going down towards, let's say, Macy's, is that is the facility on the left or right?
Past Macy's, so you're going down. Macy's is on your right.
It's on your right.
Yes.
Okay,
so
very far down.
It's further down on your right.
Okay.
So.
Okay. I mean, I get so lost in my directions. My question in regard to the school tax was mentioned on your program. Is that you will get in September or prior to September a full bill?
You're talking about the change in the STAR exemption, right? Yeah. There's going to be a change to that where right now you get a reduced bill. And that's going to switch to they're going to give you the full bill and you'll have to pay the full bill. And then that following spring when you do your tax return, you're going to get a refund, all right? So, or a credit, right, for that reduction for the STAR exemption. So you kind of have to pay ahead, and then you're going to get it back that following year.
Okay. Now, having set up a trust, in regard to the your having your house in the trust, do you, it's your responsibility to check with the assessor that you have in your local. Is that your responsibility to make sure that, or is it automatically changed?
Oh, to see that this does happen? Yeah, I believe it's going to automatically happen. And you know, the tax bills are going to be coming to you anyway, even if the house is in a trust, right? They still come to you because you have to pay them. So that should be automatically done, and the bill will come to you.
Oh, okay. Now, finally, the longest day for Alzheimer's is the 21st.
Right, next Friday.
Mm-hmm. And I went last year to a gathering, you know, to, I guess, raise money, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything like that, or do you just...
There are going to be...
This year, I mean.
Yeah, there will be several things this year. I don't have the information handy. They would be on the Alzheimer's Association website, or if you don't have access to that, you could call our office Monday, and we could give you the details of where there... I know there are events going on for that.
You mean call the Herzog?
Call the Herzog Law Office, 465-7581, and we can get you that information.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, thank you.
Okay, thanks. And we have another caller. We have Al in Utica.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Al.
I've got a question in regards to avoiding probate.
Okay.
And using the transfer and death designation on my non-retirement accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Is that generally acceptable in New York State?
Yes, and if you want to avoid probate, we generally tell people just to make sure everything is joint or has a beneficiary or it's in a trust. So if you go to your bank or your brokerage company and you make it transfer on death, meaning payable as soon as you pass away, then all they would have to do is go in with a death certificate and they'd be able to claim it.
Okay, so you still have to have a notify the individual... accounts with a death certificate.
Right, to claim it? You mean after you pass away?
Yes.
Yes, they would have to have an original death certificate and go into the bank to claim it.
Okay, well, this probably wouldn't be a bank necessarily. It would be individual investment accounts.
Right, so again, they would just have to have the death certificate, and then they could go in and they could collect the... the money, but they're going to have a death certificate to be able to claim it. Usually what will happen when you go to the bank or to the brokerage firm, they'll take the original and make a copy of it and give you the original back. But other than that, you would need it for the transfer on death account. So you can make those arrangements with any of your brokerage or your bank or whatever, but the beneficiary, you'd have to tell them, hey, by the way, something happens to me, you know, my Merrill Lynch account is going to go to you. You'll need a copy of my, you'll need an original death certificate and just go claim it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
And on to our next caller, we have Mary in East Greenbush.
Hello.
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 I have a question along those similar lines. I'm away from the radio, so I didn't quite hear what the gentleman was talking about. But if you do have a bank account within your between the husband and wife, but it just has one of their names on it, and it's not in the trust because you use it, you were saying that you could put it payable on death to, say, your children. I'm assuming you can put more than one name on that account. And the question is, when you go to the bank to do that, what is the wording? I don't know if there's a difference between in trust for or payable on death. What is the wording that you would ask them to use when you were putting someone else's name on the account?
What you would do is you would tell the bank, because each bank may use different wording, but it's transfer on death or in trust for. But really the important thing is you want it to go to your children upon your death. So that's what they would need to know. And that's just going to be different from a joint account. If you made them joint, then they could access the account now while you're still alive. And that's not what you want to do. You want to put them on the account so that it passes to them after your death.
So you would name those children that you wanted that to pass to, I assume, and supply their Social Security numbers or something like that. And
that's
then if you were to pass away, it would just go straight to them without having to go through the probate?
Yes, that's correct. All the children have to do is they don't have to go to probate. They can go to that bank and with a death certificate and have the funds transferred directly to them.
Yes. And just one last quick question. If you missed an account that you have that wasn't in the trust or wasn't worth it in a way to go to someone specifically, what is the limit of money that would trigger a probate for that? Is there like a, I know there are small letters and there are
There's something called a small estate, and that's if your assets are under $30,000, you know, that account that's not in the trust. You still have to go to court with a small estate, but it's a simpler proceeding because it's, you know, only for assets that are under $30,000, and you get letters that are specifically just for that bank account.
So that would involve just a little bit of, not the full-fledged probate.
Right.
Just you'd have to go, and I do understand that part. I just was wondering what the cutoff was for the amount of money that either determines whether it's small or regular full probate.
That's right. That's $30,000.
Okay. Well, thank you. You've answered my questions, and I appreciate that very much.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
And we have Fred from Loudonville. Good morning, Fred.
Morning. I have a couple of questions about a trust.
Okay.
If a trust was established a number of years ago and the between two people, just want to get an idea of what the basis for, say, a stock would be in that trust. So, is it determined if you were to sell it? Is the basis derived from when the trust was originally set up, or when one of the people died within the trust?
So. It really depends on the type of trust that you have. So I'll just answer about the trust that we do, the irrevocable trust. They're set up so that the basis gets what's called a step up on the date of death of the person who created the trust. So after their death, if you go to sell the stocks, you generally won't have to pay a capital gains tax, or it'll only be from the gain from their date of death until the day that you sell it. And that's because our trusts are grantor trusts. There are many different types of trusts, as you could imagine, and some of them have a carryover basis, which is not as good, right? That's the basis from the day that the person bought the stock.
Okay. And another question separate from that is if the person dies that the trust was set up for and goes to the remainder person in the trust,
mm-hmm.
Let's say, for instance, that the husband is not mentioned in that trust at all, okay?
Okay.
How does that proceed in terms of passing of the wife whose name is in the trust? Does that have to be detailed in a will between the husband and wife? Or?
So I think what you're asking is if a husband or wife does a trust and then they say that the assets go to their kids when they die and they bypass the spouse. I mean, they can do that if they want to in the trust, right? You just have to keep in mind that a spouse has something called a right of election. So if I'm married, if my husband dies and he doesn't leave me anything,
he's in big trouble.
He'll be in big trouble. But the law says that I'm entitled to get a third of the estate. So if he doesn't give me a third, I'm going to sue his ass off. No, sorry.
Well, he'll be gone.
He'll be gone. But I can go try and go after the heirs and say I needed to get a third. So you have to keep in mind that right is out there, and whether the spouse chooses to exercise that or not is up to the spouse.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Sure.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Have a great weekend. A lot of people, that comes up in second marriages.
Yes, it does.
You know, mm-hmm. second marriages where they're trying to bypass the spouse. Mm-hmm. A lot of times in a trust, let's just say that the wife had a house and, or... it's a second marriage. The wife had a house. She marries the gentleman. He moves into her house, but it's always been the family house.
Right.
And so a lot of times what we'll put language in there that says that he, you know, that it basically goes to the kids, but he can live in the house as long as mm-hmm. he's wants to. You know, if he moves out of the house, then the life estate extinguishes, or actually a life use.
That's right.
So that if he ends up going into a nursing home or whatever, so the house isn't available to pay for his care, but he still has some place to live because it's her house, it's not his.
That's right. And 9 times out of 10, that's going to work, and everyone kind of respects that arrangement. But if you have more assets or you're worried it won't work, you should think about a prenup.
Right, if it's a
second
marriage.
Before you get into
yeah.
the second marriage. Where it's very clear that your money goes to your kids and his money goes to his kids.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, our next caller, 518-476-5900. You can be the next one at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. I was kind of looking online at the website for Alzheimer's, and they have all kinds of suggestions of things that you mm-hmm. can do. For the longest day. And the reason it's called the longest day, because we ask the same thing. It's like, it is the longest day.
Of the year.
But right. the reason they call it the longest day for Alzheimer's is because someone that's caring for someone with Alzheimer's, every day is the longest mm-hmm. day. Because yeah. it's not easy. It's definitely not easy.
No, it's really hard to do that. And it's, you know, a day to kind of honor the caregivers and
exactly.
all the work that they do and to appreciate that.
And because... you know, it's one of those things where, I mean, my grandmother had Alzheimer's, but she was in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of interesting when she first was diagnosed, she could still live alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was fine. They, back in the olden days, it was kind of funny. We were talking about it the other day because whenever I was meeting with somebody, I was like, well, do they still drive? And they're like, well, no, we, you know, took care of their car. Well, my uncle took the distributor cap
right.
off of my grandmother's mm-hmm. car, and then she would call him and say, you know, you need to get over here and fix mm-hmm. my car because it won't start.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be like, oh, yeah, I'll come over. I mean, nowadays they just call AAA or whatever and go, hey, my car
That's
won't
right.
start, you know, and the people will come over and say, oh, your distributor cap is gone. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's how they kept her from driving because she didn't want to give up her car.
No, sometimes you have to resort to things like that.
So, and, you know, And that finally she did end up in a nursing home, but she stayed by herself for quite a while. She was perfectly fine.
Right.
My mom got a call from the police department one time because my grandmother had stepped off of her porch and she kind of not really fell, but got disoriented and decided that she owned the neighborhood and was going from house to house trying to collect rent.
Oh, my goodness.
And so one of the lovely neighbors called the police. Mm-hmm. And so my mom had to go pick up my grandmother at the police station.
Oh, my gosh. That's too bad. They could have just called your mom or something.
I know, exactly. They could have just called my mom. But, you know, these things happen. So these are things that happen. And people, you know, they need to be prepared for these situations. And that's why we always say, come in, do your estate planning documents, plan for the worst and hope for the best.
That's right. Yeah, make plans. Hopefully you don't have to put them into place, but it's certainly better to have that in place as to kind of to go back to the first half of the show where if you don't, you could be going to court and having to try and get guardianship over someone.
And that's not a fun process. Definitely not.
That's right.
We still have some time left. We could probably get one more caller in if you want to be the last one at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Or toll free 1-800-WROW-590. Again, the client seminar is in Kingston this week. And then the week after that, we have the ones for Albany. We have one at Glen Sanders and we have one Wolf Road.
That's right. Marriott. That's right. And as a reminder, it's not too late to sign up. You can call the office and register. And don't worry that it's a little bit past the RSVP date. We'd be happy to have you come.
Right. Stacy won't be like, no, you cannot come. We would love to have you come. We've got a few seats available. We want to make sure we have a packed house so that everybody can get their questions answered. And again, we are going to have a guest speaker at all three from the Alzheimer's Association to talk about that. And obviously, well, Dave gave it away the other week as to what the gift is for clients. You know,
he did.
Time. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's supposed to be a surprise, I thought.
I know. Well,
oh.
You know.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I know. So, anyway.
So not when you got Big Mouth David there.
Yeah,
come on.
That's right.
You know, what can I say? So, it looks like we have one last caller. We have Teresa from Rotterdam. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Good morning. I just have a short question, just information. I just heard you say a couple minutes ago your trusts that you make are grantor-type trusts.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a trust. Both my husband and I have a trust with your firm. And something has been bothering me. When we file our income tax, I had told the person that was doing the filing that they were supposed to be grantor trusts.
Mm-hmm.
But she insists on filing them as simple trusts. And is this going to pose a problem down the line?
Technically, you're right. It is incorrect, but the result is the same because all of the income is reported to you and taxed on your income tax return. So you're not missing the way the tax should be reported. But yeah, I mean, it's really not the correct way to do it.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering because I mentioned it to her again this year. I said, I really think that this should be checked off because on the top of the tax form, there's about five different types of trusts.
Right.
And she always checks off the simple trust. Mm-hmm. And she says, no. She said, a grantor type trust does not have to have a federal ID number. And I said, well, gee, I must be missing something here. There's something that's not right, you know. So I just thought I would call. Because I don't want any problems down the line, you know, when these things have to be distributed.
Right.
And so I was just wondering. But and the other thing was that I was surprised, you know, that we did have to file taxes on the trust.
You didn't pay taxes for the trust, did you?
Yes. Yes.
Then it is being done wrong. I was assuming when you do a simple trust, generally all the income is passed through to the beneficiaries.
Uh-huh.
And I assume that's what's being done, but if you have the trust paying taxes and it is being done wrong, you should call our office on Monday and we can really talk about that and kind of figure out what to do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, was it a lot of tax?
Yeah, because the trust incurs capital gains. The regular dividends are passed on to the regular 1040, but the capital gains and the trust we have to pay a tax on, and it's a considerable amount. And so I just was wondering, because none of the dividends that are in the trust they're being reinvested all the time.
Right.
Well, I hate to say this, but more than likely, your person's going to have to file amended returns because there should not be any tax at the trust level. The trust is a grantor trust. Therefore, everything passes through the trust to your personal return. So
even the capital gains?
Yeah, even the capital, capital gains, capital losses, everything passed through. It's just a conduit that just passes everything through to you.
Oh, my gosh.
So what you can do, give us a call on Monday at the office. And we'll talk to your accountant or whoever it is that's filing your taxes. And if they aren't going to do it right, then we need to get you somebody that's going to.
Okay, great, great.
Okay.
Okay, well, I was kind of wondering.
Well, I'm glad you asked because you wouldn't know if you don't ask.
That's right. That's true. That's true.
And you were right to pick up on that. So
yeah.
Good.
Okay, thank you so much for the information. I certainly will give your office a call.
Yeah, give us a call on Monday.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There's a lot of confusion about that.
There is, and even though we give information out, sometimes accountants don't, I don't know, they want to do it their own way. I can't really speak for them, but, you know, they get it wrong sometimes.
Right? They do, and we get a lot of calls right around tax time. Then they ask us, and they're like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
So, you know, we're happy to help any way that we can. We will talk to her CPA. We'll do whatever we have to do.
Or her new CPA.
That's what we were thinking. But yes,
we were thinking we may have a new one.
That's okay. I'll just say it. Her new one.
Go ahead. Ben's just going to say it.
He's just going to just throw it right out there, Ben.
She'll feel better when she does it.
That's right. We need to get this fixed. Yes.
So you guys have a great weekend. Have a happy Father's Day. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.